Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
I have my doubts about God. And I don't necessarily mean like whether or not he exists. We've talked about that kind of thing. There's just so much evidence for it. I'm pretty solid on that, but still, I have my doubts about God. Sometimes I just don't understand God. And I'm not being completely honest. If I was completely honest, I would tell you that there are often times when I really don't understand God. Times when life is tough and confusing and it just feels like God is absent. And honestly, I feel like maybe I've got things better figured out than God. Maybe I'm just a little bit smarter than God is. I'm just being honest. Today we're starting this new series called Confessions of a Pastor. And what I'm going to do for the next 3 weeks and today is I'm going to confess some things that are pretty real and pretty raw, things that might get a pastor fired in another church. And you certainly would expect to hear a pastor say, especially in church, but I'm going to confess those things to you. And I thought that today I would start out with a little bit less of a shocking confession. And so confession number one is, I have my doubts about God. Sometimes I just really don't understand God. Some of the things that cause me to feel this way are kind of like ongoing things. Like the fact that I'm a pastor. It makes no sense to me. If you know me, you'll understand this. But I'm actually quite introverted and shy. I get nervous around other people. I hate being the center of attention. And so it's like, why, God, do you have me doing this? And I'm real confident this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I've been doing it for 16 years. But if this is God's plan for me, why didn't he give me a personality that would be a better fit for the position? And it's like, God, I just don't understand you. Other times, the things that get me confused and kind of create my doubt about God are more like events that happened in my life. Like I think back to both of my wife's pregnancies and deliveries. Both times when my wife was pregnant, she got extremely sick. I mean, like in a hospital for a month at a time, IV sick. I mean, really bad. And then both deliveries, both babies barely made it. One time my wife's life was threatened. And I would love to tell you that through it all, I was like, but I had faith and knew that God's hand was upon me. But that's not how I was at all. Now, honestly, the whole time, God felt strangely absent. And I prayed, but it didn't seem like God was listening. And I was just absolutely confused and did not understand God. Sometimes you don't understand God, right? I mean, I realize the series is Confessions of a Pastor, not Confessions of the People in the Seats. But if it's cool, I'll confess for you, because sometimes you don't understand God, right? I'm not the only one. I mean, I'm not the only one who's had their faith challenged. I'm not the only one with questions. I can't be the only one who's gone through times where just God doesn't seem to be there or to make any sense. And so sometimes you don't believe, right? Sometimes you have struggles. Sometimes God doesn't make any sense to you. And here's the good news for you and me. The good news is that we are not alone. We are not alone. And hopefully this series is going to help you in that kind of way. We're not alone. In fact, and this may really surprise some of you, but did you know that the Bible is filled with examples of people who had their doubts about God? People who did not understand God. People who were confused and questioned God and got angry at God. And I'm talking about the people who believed in and loved God. Okay? I'm not talking about the cynics and the skeptics. I'm talking the people who believed in and loved God also at the same time struggled with and had questions and doubts about God. Tons of examples. One of the examples is a guy named Job. Maybe you've heard his name or his story. But Job is this guy where, like, when you think life is pretty bad, you remember Job's story and you're like, I guess it could be worse. Because Job is a guy, his life was going real well. He had great character, integrity. He was trustworthy. People really respected him. And he believed in God. He loved God with all his heart. I mean, he really had faith. And then Job goes through this series of tragic events where he loses everything. Everything he owns, and much worse, his children. In fact, the only thing he has left is his wife. And so he goes to his wife for comfort, for encouragement. And she says, I quote, "Job, curse God and die." It's like, thanks, honey. Smoochie, smoochie. That's so encouraging. It's like, really, this is the one thing I got left with is her? Like, of everything? Why? And here's what we see with Job. He totally doesn't understand what's happening to him. We see him questioning God. We see him angry with God. I mean, he's shouting to the heavens, why, God? What have I done to deserve this, God? Where are you? Why would you allow this to happen, God? He totally questions, and he has his doubts, and he doesn't understand God. And see, we're not alone. Job is just one example of many in the Bible. But here's the thing. With Job, we see him questioning and having doubts and not understanding God and arguing with God and wrestling and shouting out in anger. But check this. Still, at the same time, he trusts God. Okay? I'm not saying he didn't have questions, because he did. I'm not saying he didn't get angry, because he was. But at the same time that he's wrestling and struggling and can't understand and is confused and he has his doubts, at the same time, he continues to trust God. And we kind of see this. He goes back and forth. He's like, why, God? But I know I can trust you. God, why would you do this to me? But I know there must be a plan. He has this kind of wrestling match, but he continues to trust God. How? How did he do that? Because that's a really important question for you and me, isn't it? Because if you're like me, and I assume you are, and you have some doubts, and you have sometimes when you wrestle, and you just don't understand God, when you go through messy, difficult times, how do you hold on to faith and continue to believe in God even when all that's going on? Because we need that, right? That's what we need to do in those tough times. So how did he do it? Well, listen, I don't claim to have this all figured out, okay? But here's what I think. I think Job was able to continue believing in God because he had already decided what he believed about God. I'll say that again because I think it's really important for us. I think it's like a key for us. Job was able to continue to believe in God because he had already decided what he believed about God. See, in the midst of the tragedy and all that's going on, Job was not developing his picture of God. He wasn't trying to figure out who is God and what is he like based on these events. Job had already developed this picture of God, of who God was. He had spent his life developing that picture through reading the scriptures, through praying, through God providing for him, through his personal experiences with God. I mean, he had a real relationship with God. And so he already knew what he believed about God. And because of that, he was able to give God the benefit of the doubt even when things were going wrong. You get this, right? Because you have friends you do this with, don't you? Have you ever gone to let's say you have a plan to meet a friend for lunch, and you show up, but your friend's not there, and you're just sitting there looking at your watch. There are some friends you have who you would start to go through these thoughts in your mind. What a flake. I can't believe this. Or what an insensitive jerk, you know, right? Some of your friends. But then you have other friends who you'd be like, man, what's wrong? Like, I hope they didn't get in a car accident. So something must be wrong, right? Or you think, am I at the wrong restaurant? Because this is so unlike them, right? Why? Because those friends have proven their character to you, right? You've gone through some things with that friend, and you know who that friend is. And so you don't wonder, based on this event about your friend's character, you've already decided who your friend is, and you're able to continue to believe in your friend even when things are confusing, right? You can give some people the benefit of the doubt. Here's what I've decided in my life. The best time for me to decide on my attitude towards God is not when I'm in the middle of pain. The best time for me to figure out who God is not when I'm in the middle of some messy tragedy in my life. No, the best time for me to decide who God is now. Like, it's important for me to have an accurate picture of God, and I need to do it now when I have a clear head and when I can make an honest, accurate assessment rather than being driven by emotion and just coming up with something crazy because of what I'm going through. And so this is important for us. The best time for us to develop an accurate picture of God is now. And we need the accurate picture of God, because when we go through tough times, what's going to enable us to continue to believe in God is having already decided what we believe about God. And so we need an accurate picture of God. The obvious question, I hopefully some of you are already kind of thinking, is how? How, right? How do you get an accurate picture of God? How? Because, like, there are so many people pointing to their pictures of God and telling you that you need to believe their picture of God, right? There are people who point and say, God is mean and vindictive. There are other people who point and say, God is tolerant and he accepts everything and everyone. There are other people who point and say, God is like this master puppeteer and he's running our lives and it's like we're marionettes and he's pulling the strings. There are other people point and say, no, God is, he's this absentee landlord. He just kind of wound the world up and let it go. He doesn't care what's going on in our lives. Everybody's pointing at their pictures of God and telling you to believe it. So whose picture do you believe? Who do you listen to? And what if they're wrong? 2 weeks ago, I went to this little pastor conversation thing. About 25 pastors got invited to this thing. It's kind of a cool thing to get invited to. It was in Los Angeles from like Monday lunchtime to Wednesday lunchtime. But I couldn't go on Monday because we have a Monday night service here at Verve. So I drove up after our service on Monday night 2 weeks ago, got to LA around 1 in the morning, checked into my hotel, went to sleep, got up a little bit later, and went down to my car. And everybody else had been at the building where the office was, where the meeting was the day before, but I hadn't. So I punched the address of the building into my GPS, start following it, leave the parking lot, drive around the corner, and there I am. And I realized, oh, they put the building where the meeting was and the hotel across the street so you could walk, but I didn't know that. And I thought, well, I could just drive back and park back to the hotel. And I looked at my watch, it was too late. So I thought, I'll just park in the parking garage for the building and it's fine. And so I enter this humongous parking garage. I'm on the phone, I'm talking to somebody. Walk out, go to this meeting. I'm there all day. And at the end of the day, I was talking to the guy whose office it was that we met in. And we're walking down to the bottom floor of the building. And I said, yeah, you're not going to believe this. I actually drove across the street and parked in the parking garage for the building. I didn't realize the hotel was right there. And he laughed. And so we walked out and he goes, all right, well, have a great night. There's your parking garage. And he pointed to the parking garage. And so I said, all right, see ya. And I walk over to the parking garage. As I'm walking into it, it's huge. It's mammoth. And I realized, man, I was not paying attention. When I drove in this morning, I don't know where I'm parked. And I was like, I think it was the third floor. It had to be the third floor. And so I go up to the third floor, and I start walking this huge parking garage, and I do not see my car. And so I'm like, maybe it was the fourth floor. So I go to the fourth floor and walk it, and I do not see the car. And so I go down the second floor, and I call my wife. And it's been like 20, 30 minutes. I'm dying. And I'm like, baby, I got a problem. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't find our car. She's like, it's got to be there. I'm like, it's not here. I walked the second floor, the third. There's no way I parked in the first or the fifth or the sixth or the seventh. There's no way. And she's like, you'll find it. I'm like, I'm not going to find it. I am going to die in this parking garage. And I'm like, well, seriously, what do I do? How will I get home to Vegas? She's like, you're going to find the car. You got two more days. I'm like, I'm not going to find it. It's not here. So I continue to walk. I'm dying. Finally, I see this lady who works there sitting in a booth. And I went up, knocked on the window. And I'm like, ma'am, you have to help me. I can't find my car. I can't walk anymore. Help me. And she's like, it's all right. We'll get the security card to come and drive you around. I was like, thank you. So he comes in a little golf cart. I jump in, we start driving. I'm like, I think it's on the third floor. We drive the third floor. It's not there. I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. And I'm asking questions like, does this happen a lot, or am I like the one guy that you're going to be talking about for years? And he's like, oh, that's no problem. And so we drive the second floor. It's not there. We drive the fourth floor. We don't see it. And so he said, well, tell me this. When you drove in, what did you see? Like, which entrance? There's a bunch of entrances. And I said, I was on the phone. I wasn't paying attention. He said, well, when you walked out, what did you see? And I said, yeah, I walked out of the parking garage, and there was like three little restaurants there. He went, huh, I don't know what, no, that's weird. And so we continue to look, first floor, fifth, sixth, seventh, third again, second again. We drove for an hour and 10 minutes in his little golf cart. It's now been an hour and 40 minutes, and I'm dying. Like, I'm so embarrassed and whatever. So finally, I'm like, dude, just drop me off. I was like, I'll come back in the middle of the night. Like, will my car be the only one? I'll just walk the whole thing. He's like, I don't know, maybe. And so he's like, man, I'm sorry I couldn't help you. I said, that's okay. And as I get out, he says, what did you see when you left the building? I said, yeah, there's like three little restaurants. He went, yeah, there's just no restaurants when you leave this parking garage. There is at the other parking garage. And I said, the other parking garage? And he said, yeah, the one on the other side of the building across the street. If you left that one, you'd see three little restaurants. And I'm like, you're telling me this now? Seriously, after an hour and 10 minutes, that was the first question you asked me. And it was all because that guy pointed to the wrong parking garage and said, there's your parking garage. Right? And there's all these people pointing to their pictures of God, telling us to believe what they believe about God. And we have our own assumptions about what God must be like, right? So who do you listen to? Do you know what the answer is? No one. No one. You don't listen to anyone because how do you know they're right? They're human beings, right? How do you know their picture of God is right? How do you know you're right? You don't listen to anyone. If you want an accurate picture of God, and you need one, you don't listen to anyone. Instead, you look at Jesus. You look at Jesus. Let me show you in the Bible. If you have a Bible, you can turn to John chapter 14. If you don't have a Bible with you, that's no problem. We'll put the verses up on the screen. You can read them up there. But hey, let me tell you, if you don't own a Bible, if you're like, man, I don't think I have one, or it's like it's in some sort of like Shakespearean language I don't understand, we give out Bibles for free back at the Velcro Bar. The Velcro Bar is kind of our connecting place. Get it? Velcro. Yeah. And so we give out Bibles back there, but it's also a place for you to ask questions, to get connected. If you want to learn more about our church, maybe you'll be walking out of here today in a little bit with questions about God, about what you heard today, about what's the next step for you spiritually, man, stop back there. They'd love to help you. Nice people who will take care of you. So John chapter 14, we're going to look at verses 7 through 10. Jesus is talking here. He's talking to one of his friends, one of the guys who had been following around for years, named Philip. Jesus says this. He says, if you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Philip said, Lord, he's talking to Jesus, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip, even after I've been among you such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you are not just my own. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. And so what Jesus is saying is this. He's saying, listen, if you've seen me, you've seen God. If you know me, you know God. And if you want to develop an accurate picture of who I am, then what you need to do, of who God is, and what you need to do is you need to look at me. You don't need to listen to all the people who are pointing to their picture of God. You need to look at me. And if anything that anyone ever tells you about God doesn't jive with the picture that I give you of me in the Bible, then they've sent you to the wrong parking garage. Right? The Bible teaches this principle consistently, that Jesus came to be the picture of God for us so that we could know who God is. And it's the key for us, right? If we're going to be able to believe in God, even through the difficult times, we have to decide already what we believe about God. And so let's look at a few more verses that tell us this. So in the book of Colossians, we'll put it on the screen, it says he, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. And so it says Jesus came to be a physical image that we could see of the invisible God. And then in Hebrews, the Bible says the Son, that's Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. And so what this is teaching us is the more you know Jesus, the more you know God, right? The more you experience Jesus, the more you've experienced God. And if you want to develop an accurate picture of God, and you should, then what you need to do is take a really good look at Jesus. And there's these four books in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that give us a very intimate, detailed account of Jesus' life for about 3.5 years of his life, so we can know what Jesus is like. And I will tell you this. I've become just convinced that us being convinced that God looks like Jesus is the key to us getting through those hard times when God doesn't make any sense. Because if we understand that God looks just like Jesus, well, then we'll know that God is trustworthy and we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And the reason is because when you do read about Jesus in these books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what you'll see is that Jesus was amazing. He's amazing. I mean, you look at his life the way he loves, the way he has compassion for people who are hurting and poor and hungry, the way he cries with people who cry, the way he's this inspirational leader, the way he would say like the challenging, tough truth that no one wanted to hear, but he would say it in this totally grace-filled way. And you read about Jesus and you get to know Jesus, and what you come to the conclusion of is, man, if God is like that, then I can trust God. If God looks like Jesus, then I can totally give God the benefit of the doubt. Even when life is crazy and I don't understand God, still, like Job, I can still trust God, even in the mess. You know what's interesting to me? When you study the life of Jesus, you get this really clear picture, this accurate picture of who God is. But the other thing that's interesting is you'll see that even Jesus had moments where he had his doubts about God. Even Jesus had moments where God didn't make sense to him. See, Jesus was God. He was God's son. But when Jesus chose to come to earth and live as a human being, just like us, Jesus kind of put his life into the hands of his Father God, like many of us have chosen to do. And in Jesus' life, most of the time he's confident about what God's doing and God's in control. But we do see moments where Jesus, who's living life, he's God, but he's living life as a human being here on earth, he has moments of doubt, moments where he's not so sure about God's plan. Like for instance, the night before Jesus is crucified, Jesus knows what's going to happen to him. And Jesus goes to this garden to pray. And we are kind of privy to his prayers. We get to hear what he prays. And what he prays is not, bring it on. I know what's going to happen tomorrow. I know the pain I'm going to go through. I know that I'm going to die, but it's all part of your plan. And so bring it on. I am ready for this. Not what he prays. What Jesus actually prays is, okay, God, Father, I know this is the plan, but is it possible there's another plan? Like, is there possible we could do like an audible and just like figure out some other way of doing this? Because I don't want to. I just really don't want to go through this tomorrow. And so is there another way? And so we see this moment where Jesus is confused, where Jesus questions God, where Jesus isn't so sure about God. But check this, like Job, still Jesus trusts God. In the same way, he has his doubts and his questions, but the whole time he trusts God, all right? Now, Jesus' friends, these guys who have been with him and follow him around and learning from him, they don't trust God. And through the events that transpire, they don't trust God. Like that night, Jesus, it's Thursday night, Jesus is arrested, and Jesus trusts God in that moment. His friends, they don't trust God. And then on Friday, Jesus is crucified. His friends don't trust God in that moment. Jesus trusts God. And through it all, his friends, like many of us, they're just confused and God doesn't make sense and they're losing faith and they're losing hope. But Jesus continues to trust. And it turns out that Jesus was right. The friends weren't. Jesus was right. Because what happens is on Thursday, Jesus is arrested. And on Friday, Jesus is crucified. But then on Sunday, on Easter Sunday, the day that we come together today to celebrate, Jesus raises from the dead. And we realize, and Jesus' friends realize, that God had a plan all along. That even when it seemed on Friday like God was absent and God didn't have control of the situation, God did, and it was all part of his plan. They just hadn't seen the end of the story yet. And listen, someday we're going to learn that same lesson. Some of us have, right? Some of you would say, I've learned it, because there have been times in my life where God made no sense and I was thrown into confusion. I had my doubts about God and I felt like God was absent. I lost all hope. But then later, God came through for me and I saw his plan kind of come into fruition and I realized that God was there the whole time. Right? Some of us have learned that lesson. But some of us haven't yet. Some of us need to learn it again. Because the truth is, some of us, man, we're still in this place where we're questioning, right? We're questioning, why God? This doesn't make sense, God. You know, I don't understand God. The truth is that some of us are, it's like we're stuck in Friday. You know, Friday, that day where Jesus is put on trial and Jesus is crucified, and it seems like God is absent and he's not in control and all hope is lost. It's like some of us are stuck in Friday. And what we don't realize is that the rest of the story hasn't been written yet, right? There's a famous preacher named Tony Campolo. Maybe a couple of you maybe have seen him or something, but he's kind of like a pasty white guy, overweight, bald. He's not much to look at, but he's a great preacher. He's real passionate and energetic, and he travels all over the world preaching like almost every weekend, but he lives in Philadelphia, and when he's at home for a weekend, he attends a black church, a church almost made up entirely of African Americans, and Tony Campolo goes to it, and his family, and a few other white people. But occasionally, Tony Campolo has been asked to speak at his church in Philadelphia that he attends, and he says that when you do it, he says it's very interesting to preach at a black church because the people let you know how you're doing. He tells about this one time where he was preaching and he realized it wasn't going well and it just wasn't connecting. But in the middle of the sermon, this lady in the back yelled, "Help him, Jesus!" And he says, but when you're doing good and you're on, it's really working, he says, like, the deacons who sit in the front will be like, "Preach, brother, preach!" And the ladies will around the room will be like this. They'll be like, Well, there was this one time where his church and like six other churches in Philadelphia came together for a Good Friday service. Good Friday being the day that Jesus was crucified, the Friday before Easter. And we say it's good because Jesus died for us that day. And so they came together to celebrate Good Friday. And they had seven different preachers scheduled to preach that day. Tony Campolo was sixth. And he went up and he preached and he said he was on that day. His sermon was great. It went well. People were into it. And he said it was just awesome. So he goes back, and the last preacher of the day is the preacher of his church in Philadelphia, the church that he attends. And so he goes down, he sits next to his pastor, and he says, "Pastor, what'd you think?" And his pastor said, "You did all right, boy." And he kind of squeezed his knee. And so Tony Campolo says to his pastor, he says, "Well, you're going to be able to top that?" And his pastor says, "Son, you sit back, because the old man is going to do you in." And Tony Campolo says, I was so on that day, I didn't figure that anyone could do me in. But he said, the old man got up, and he did me in with one line. He went up, and he preached for an hour and a half. And basically just said one line over and over. Here's the line. "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming." That doesn't knock your socks off, right? But you should have heard him do it. He started off real slow and soft. He said, "It was Friday. It was Friday, and the scribes and the Pharisees had turned Jesus over to Pilate to carry out their plans. But that was Friday. Sunday's coming." Someone yelled, "Preach, preach, brother, preach." And so he did. He said, "It was Friday. And on Friday, Pilate thought he had washed his hands of all his troubles. But that was Friday. Sunday's coming." He said, "Friday. It was Friday. And my Jesus is dead on a tree. But that's Friday. That's Friday. Sunday's coming. Friday. Friday, Mary's crying her eyes out. The disciples are running around in every direction like sheep without a shepherd. But that was Friday. Friday! Sunday's coming." A lady said, "Woo!" A few guys said, "Keep going, keep going." And so he did. He said, Friday, people are looking at the world saying, as things have been, so shall they be. You can't change things in this world. You can't change nothing in this world. You can't change nothing in this world. But that was only Friday. Sunday's coming. Friday, them forces that oppress the poor and they keep people down, them forces that like to destroy people, them forces that are in control and they're gonna rule. But what they just don't know is that it's only Friday. Sunday's coming. Friday, people are saying that darkness is gonna rule the world. Sadness, it's everywhere. But they just don't know. It's only Friday. Sunday's coming. And he did that for an hour and a half. An hour and a half. Just the same. Friday, Sunday's coming. Friday, Sunday's coming. Friday, Sunday's coming. And here's how he ended his sermon. He ended by yelling at the top of his lungs, Friday! And all the people that were there that day just yelled back at him, Sunday's coming! And then he just walked off the stage. Isn't that awesome? And listen. That is really, really good news. Right? For you. It's really good news for me. It is really good news because you may be stuck in Friday. And let's just be honest. A lot of us, there's areas of our life where we just feel like we are stuck in Friday, where life is confusing and it seems like God is absent and it seems like all hope is lost and it seems like death is won victory. You may be stuck in Friday. And you may be questioning God. You may be trying to figure out, and it may be that God just doesn't make any sense to you right now. But you can still believe in God. But first, you have to decide what it is that you believe about God. What you need in your life is an accurate picture of who God is. And the place where we get the accurate picture is not by listening to where people are pointing, but by looking at Jesus. By looking at Jesus. And it's comforting. I think it's comforting to know that even Jesus had moments where he didn't understand, where he questioned God, but still he trusted. And he was able to trust God because he knew God. And because he knew God, he knew his character, he knew who he was able to give God the benefit of the doubt. And so even when it seemed like God was absent, even when it seemed like all hope was lost, Jesus never lost hope. And we don't have to either. We don't have to either. We may not understand. We may not know what's going on. But we can give God the benefit of the doubt because God is trustworthy and we can know God and know that God is trustworthy. And so even when our lives and our circumstances get out of control, even when it seems like God is absent and all hope is lost, we don't need to lose hope because we know. We know that it's only Friday! Viva La Verve.